Hey everybody, this is Matt McLeod.
And this is Philip Simondet.
And we are Next At Bat, and we are back.
Yes.
It is so nice to actually be able to finally say those words. It has been a long, long journey.
That's right. We're very sorry for the long hiatus. If you know me and have talked to me in this during this time, you know how much I have been frustrated, and we have been frustrated.
Yeah, I've been incredibly frustrated too, although Philip has been mildly more vocal about it.
Well, I'm more of a talker. Yep. God damn, we missed you.
We really, really have missed you. We've been going through some big, long technical problems. Fortunately, we are on Noise Picnic now.
That's right. That's the upside of all of this, is we're now part of Noise Picnic. Because we've got Eric McEwen in our corner, and
yeah,
he knows how shit works
better
than we do.
We are very excited to be there, and we are excited to start bringing you new episodes.
Recorded months ago, guys.
There might be some mildly dated material on there, and so today's episode...
Interplanetary Appeal.
Yeah, Interplanetary Appeal 2.
Right, the second time there came, the first time we've done that.
Yeah, I'm going to call it the seconding. It's James Rohn and Jake Scott, and they're both amazing. And the first episode that they were on, did you know that it was the most downloaded episode we've ever had?
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, deservedly.
Yeah.
We recorded this when they were beginning their dream sequence.
Last spring. And I feel terrible. We feel terrible.
Absolutely.
I think. Do you feel?
Only terrible.
Okay.
I only feel negative emotions.
Fair enough. When we recorded this, we had all the intentions of releasing it basically the next week. But they had the misfortune of recording right when... we had some serious technical problems that have led us to now.
Yeah.
And we feel just terrible, especially because this episode was directly tied to the release of their dream sequence show.
Which they've since stopped doing.
Yeah, which they've since closed. It was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really
Absolutely.
Great show. I went and saw it a few times. Listening to this now, it's a really neat
artifact.
Listen, it is a really neat artifact because it still completely works because the interview is terrific. They are just really smart, fascinating people, and the improv is really fun.
Absolutely.
So enjoy this episode and enjoy many more to come.
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hi, I'm Matt.
First we'll have a little chat,
then put on our improv hats.
Now it's time for Next At Bat.
And we're here again today with Interplanetary Appeal. This is our first repeat guest. Hey, guys, how are you?
I didn't know we were the
really
first.
Good.
We're
yeah.
good. Yeah.
You are
yeah.
the first repeat guest. So we are very excited to have you back again. So James and Jake, do you want to introduce yourselves real quick?
I'm James from Interplanetary Appeal, the improv group with Jake Scott.
And I'm Jake Scott of the Interplanetary Appeal with James Rohn. Of the Interplanetary... Yeah.
yeah.
You know, I'm Jake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as always, I'm here today with Philip Simondet.
Of the Next At Bat podcast with Matt McLeod. And I'm also here with Matt McLeod.
And I'm Matt McLeod of the Interplanetary Appeal podcast.
Oh. He loves putting himself in groups.
Yeah.
He's in every group that we've ever had.
I am now officially a third member. That's
right.
Cool.
Yeah, well,
sounds good.
All right, great. I don't know this new show, though, so I'm going to have to learn that.
We don't necessarily. No.
So thank you guys for coming back on. You do have a new show called Dream Sequence, and let's just start off by talking about that. What's the new show about?
You want to start with that, Jake?
Yeah, sure. So we have a new show at Huge Theater at 6 p.m. on Sunday. And I don't even know how we stumbled upon the idea of dreams. But the way it works is we bring an audience member up after they've had an opportunity to write down a brief summary of a recent dream that they had. And then we bring them up and then we ask them to tell their dream, and then we use a dream dictionary to interpret the symbols that they dreamed about, and then use that as inspiration for the scenes we do.
Hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of like a loose.
That's a loose.
Yeah.
Like, elevator pitch.
And I think we came at Dreams because, and I think we said this in the last podcast, but we always start with something kind of abstract that is not very improv-y. We're sort of like, what's a concept that we're interested in?
Here's something we want to explore.
Yeah, and I doubt that either one of us were like, you know what I'm into? Dreams.
Dream interpretation.
Everyone loves to hear about your dreams.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well,
that's a thing we talked about because there's almost nothing more boring than listening to somebody else's dream.
But right? Nothing more interesting to them than talking about it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, totally. And so we've been trying to interview people and keep it interesting while they tell us their dreams. And so far it's been fine.
Actually, like on last week's one, we had somebody come up who was just visiting the area from Arizona.
Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Which I remembered because as soon as she said it, I'm like, I thought of all those Santa Fe songs from Newsies and
Rent.
Yeah.
Oh my
just
God.
Keep it in the back pocket.
That was not my reference. But she
That's
actually.
That's the first thing I thought of too.
She actually does do like work in the field of not necessarily dream interpretation, but she does work in the field of like tarot cards. And I can't remember.
She never said tarot. She said she was intuitive.
She's a counselor. Intuitive counselor or a spiritual counselor or something like that. And so I felt like a fraud immediately. You know, I was like, oh God, you know, this is your livelihood and we're about to do this badly as a gimmick, you know what I mean? And so as an interviewer, it challenged me to sort of be like, all right, we are gonna do this on the freaking level. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna wink at anything. We're just gonna take seriously what you say and and then do some improv about it. And we've been tweaking our structure as we go along. That next part that we do, the scenes based upon the dreams, that's the part that has been in major flux.
Okay.
We started out doing something that was pretty convoluted, no surprises there. And then we've week by week been simplifying it, but we're trying not to ever let it get to the point where it's just sort of basically a dream Armando. We're not very interested in doing something like that. And so we've got... Right now, what we're doing, and this is in a conversation before the show began, you were describing a form where you're hoping that all the strings that tie the improv in place will be invisible to the audience.
Right. Having a lot of mechanics in place.
But... Indeed, yeah. And I suspect that this is going to be like this for the audience as well, but right now, basically, what we're doing is improvising three dreams that mm-hmm. that a dreamer might have that are inspired by what is said. Then we go into a scene from the life of the dreamer. Mm-hmm. And that scene begins with somebody saying, you know, I had the weirdest dream last night. And then they talk about what that dream is. And we see their life and we sort of try to speculate about how it is that
the
they might have dreamed. Them. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And I actually have an idea for this week that I want to run by you.
Should we do it now?
We can. we can do
this
that.
This is how the sausage is made, guys.
That's it. Well, I was just kind of thinking, because we had been doing this thing where we'd then gone back into a series of dreams, but now I feel like that's unnecessary, and I'm interested in hanging out in the life of the dreamer.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I think we could do three dreams and then spend the rest of our time with the dreamer.
Yeah, because the dreams, yeah, we might as well try it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were afraid of potentially not offending, but you know you wanted to do justice to this woman who it was her livelihood, mm-hmm. like you said. Do you find that you know you are maybe kind of sending up the dreams, the suggestions that you're getting from the audience, mm-hmm. or are you taking it very seriously? Like, where are you with that?
I don't think we're not really doing a send up of it. I think we mostly just use it as a point of inspiration, and then because mm-hmm. we don't really like interview them and then make fun of them on stage thing. It's more just getting those three. We take three major themes in their dream and then use those for the inspiration for the three mm-hmm. scenes, pretty much.
If there's comedy that comes from the actual, yeah, there's nothing intentional in the improv about making fun of the person. But mm-hmm. if there are laughs during the interview, then I feel like they usually come from. When we'll clarify something that they think is totally normal. So,
sure.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, whether it's in the dream or whether it's part of their life, when they're just sort of like, and of course I blah, blah, and you're like, wait, of course you whatever it is? You know, so, and it's just, which I think is one of the fun things about interviewing people in general, is that when you get them to tell a story, then you hear something that's idiosyncratic about their life.
Right.
And because I think that we tend to share only a very specific set of things about ourselves with our friends and with the public, whatever that means, when you have somebody talk in a more general way, then you're able to pick up on things that we don't talk about that much in public life. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I think that there's a lot of comedy in that. My favorite comedy, I think, possibly is, and it might be just because it's the kind that I feel like I have the most access to, is the comedy of familiarity.
Sure.
And I do theater for community. That is the reason why I do it. That's the reason why I started it, and that's the reason why I continue it. And so when a laugh can come from all of us going like, oh shit, I didn't think anybody else felt that way.
Right.
Then amen, I'm there. I want to do it. You know? Right.
And so, there are so many moments of those.
Yeah, man.
Things. So one of the things that I've been itching to ask you guys about since you were on the first time was about like that you're... We sort of touched on this, but didn't as much as I would have liked, that you're both very much perfectionists when it comes to the way you work together and putting your stage shows on. And so in this particular case, in Dream Sequence, I was talking to Jake a little bit, and when you opened the first show, you both felt like you were in a different place than you actually found that you were when you put it in front of an audience. So how do you feel about the show right now that you're still like you just said to the audience that
this is that gotcha shit you said you weren't gonna do.
I don't mean it in that way, but I mean that you're kind of still workshopping. Where are you at with it?
I think with all of our shows, we'll continue to make tweaks even once it opens. Sure. But this one, I think we, it was probably the least rigorous preparation period that we had just because of the demands of the other parts of our lives. Because I remember when we created the Choose Your Own Adventure show, we rehearsed that thing a lot. And we read so many Choose Your Own Adventure, like we sat in a coffee shop reading aloud to each other from Choose Your Own Adventure books and like then diagramming the books and doing all this stuff. And in this one we did not go that in depth with it. We did some other work, but it was not to the extent. And so I think just because it was less, it maybe felt a little bit less in depth, the preparation maybe.
I'm not sure. So yeah, it's true that I think that if neither one of us were teaching this year, then or if, you know, Jake was teaching a grade he taught before, if I was not doing my first year, then possibly we would have rehearsed the show more than we did. We'd still rehearsed it.
So, yeah.
But I feel like some of the reasons why we've prepared in the way that we have before had also to do with the circumstances. So with the Choose Your Own Adventure show, that was the first thing we ever did together. And so I feel like in addition to rehearsing the form, we were sort of getting to know how we work as a duo and how to do duo improv at all. Mm-hmm. And then when we were preparing for the Fringe show of the Choose Your Own Adventure show, because we had some scripted elements, we were trying to figure out how the structure of Choose Your Own Adventure shows would inform whatever we ended up putting together. And so that took a lot of analysis and a lot of study. This form requires less of that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
With that said, I mean, it's super uncomfortable to be workshopping something in front of an audience. I don't like to think about it that way at all. And I've been in continual conversation with Butch about that, sort of like, because his voice as a tech artist is very much a part of this show. It's not like we can just sort of be like, hey, we're changing it this week. Like, we have to keep him in the loop on everything we change.
Right.
And I want, every time I tell him about a change, I'm like, I hope you know that we are not treating this as though each show is sort of a throwaway until we get to the one that we really like. Because obviously what we want for every show is for that to be the best show we've ever done.
Right.
And so I feel super uncomfortable when it's not. And I think that I'm way harder on myself and on us as a group than Jake is. Which isn't to say that Jake isn't also a perfectionist, but I just think I haven't beaten this particular category.
That's true, yeah.
And so, I remember after our second one, Jake was like, yeah, that felt great. And I was like, it did not feel great. That felt bad. I feel bad. I'm going to have a bad night tonight. You know? And then, like, as the week progressed, a couple of people sort of shouted out the show, you know, and talked about some of the highlights from the show. And we were like, oh, well, maybe, or I was like, oh, well, maybe it wasn't so bad, you know? Because it wasn't what I want it to be yet. I mean, I kind of feel like right. I've taken a lot of comfort, and I think we might have even talked about this before, from that Ira Glass quote.
Yes. Yeah.
Where he talks about how if you're unsatisfied with your work, it means you've got good taste.
Right. because you have a vision of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard.
So I have shitty taste. I'm
trying to say that Jake has worse taste than me.
mission accomplished. Well, you know, the funny thing, I wasn't really trying to get at that as much as you guys entered into the first show kind of thinking you were in one place and then right. realizing you were in a different place yeah. once you finished that first show.
Sure. Yeah.
And what kind of changed once it got in front of the audience for you? Like, what made you realize that it was not quite... You weren't as happy with it as you thought you were. That's not really the right way to put
it. No, that is the right way to put it.
Yeah, that's about right.
I have something to say about this.
But yeah, I'm trying to think.
Because we started out by having this sort of inception concept.
That's right.
Yeah, the beginning of every scene would be somebody waking up from the dream before it.
Oh, okay.
And that within each dream, there would be something that would be repeated from the dream before it, which mm-hmm. is a cool idea.
Yeah, that's a very cool idea. Cool.
And we were really excited about it intellectually. And in rehearsal, we were able to get some of it to work. When we did it in front of an audience, it felt so different. Because I think partially because the energy of an audience is something that you come to sort of anticipate. Mm-hmm. And we are lucky enough to be part of some lineups that have some draw. And so that means that we are accustomed to receiving some reciprocity from the audience.
And pretty frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes in ways that I'm sort of like, I think you're laughing because you know us more than because you think that's funny. Or you know what I mean? Anyway. So.
Yeah, I do.
And so. With this show, we have to earn every laugh we get hardcore. because we're working partially with an unfamiliar audience and partially because we're working with a brand new audience and a brand new time slot.
It's a brand new time slot, it's audiences are having to discover it or take a chance on it because it's not, you know, you can rest assured go to Saturday night and you kind of know what you're going to get and it's going to be a full house and like that laughter is contagious. And it's a little bit tougher when you're, I think we had like 18 people there last week.
Right.
And so it's like, we were happy with that, but it's totally a different feeling. Mm-hmm. It feels like huge 3 years ago, almost. Like
it does absolutely feel like that. So, Jake and I did Thursday nights the first year that Huge was open, and we were back to back with What If. Like it was me and Jake back to back with Butch and Tim. And I don't want to blow our own horn, but I feel like we're fairly consistent. Butch and Tim are one of my favorite duos ever. Mm-hmm. And we were playing to under 10 people frequently. Yeah. And it was, so it does feel like early days Huge. And so that's an adjustment. But then also one of the things that we noticed was that starting every scene with waking up from a dream means that one person is inactive at the beginning of every scene and has to justify why they were sleeping in the middle of what could be something that they're not supposed to be sleeping during. So to start every scene with a justification.
And a groggy character justifying something. Yeah.
Which could be slow starting.
And we had also decided to edit those dreams. We had Butch blacking us out.
Yeah.
And and just having that killed more of our momentum just because there was like dead time.
Yeah.
So we cut the blackouts thing and now we use them differently. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But that all helped, and that stuff you wouldn't know until you put it up on its feet in front of a crowd of people, because different things happen when you're in the basement of the theater rehearsing on the little stage down there.
It's hard to anticipate the timing and the logistics. Those are two different lines, and it's hard to see the way they work together.
Most definitely.
Or don't work together.
So
ultimately, for this particular show, what do you have a vision for what is what you do want it to get to? Or at this point, or is it still, like you said, in flux and you'll know it when you see it?
I think I more know what I want it to feel like, not necessarily what I want the specific beats to be, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like the structure, I was pretty happy with the way we've kind of tweaked it to what we have now. And the thing you mentioned earlier sounds interesting too, and like we'll try that. But I think one of the things that was so exciting when we started talking about it was doing those repetitive things where we had the way some dream logic works in and the way callbacks work in the improv set.
Yeah.
So when it can feel like it all fits together in a weird way, I think that will be kind of hitting the mark that we aim for, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just always want to do a good show that the audience right. enjoys and feels like they saw a show and mm-hmm. were entertained.
Yeah. So last night, Harbor Theater Group, the collaborative theater group that for teenagers that I run, opened a show called The Chefs in the Bathroom, which is an improvised show about eating out. And Sadiq, who is one of our extremely talented young improvisers, it even feels silly to call them young improvisers because their youth has only good things to do with what they do on stage.
Right, yeah. They just bring new things. That's right. All that young means.
Yeah, I mean, they're well-trained in it and they're really experienced. And so it feels like it's almost going like, watch out, it's youth performance, forgive them for what, but it's not like that at all. So anyway, Sadiq, one of the improvisers, was like, because we were running through the form and it has some complexities to it. And he was like, oh God, I'm so stressed out. I just want to do some improv. And I was like, I feel you. And the reason why we're doing this is, of course, to create like a theatrical home for the improv to exist in. And there's some reason why Jake and I are both really attached to that idea. That is really, it goes against the way a lot of people think about improv. I remember having a conversation with Eric Noble a few years ago, because he was talking about an idea he had for a narrative form, and he wanted to make sure that it didn't overlap with an idea that I never did for a narrative form, so that we wouldn't be trying to promote the same show at the same time or whatever. Sure. Mm-hmm. And that got us into talking about narrative improv and the theory behind it, the ideas behind it, and the fact that a lot of people don't really truly consider it to be true improv or pure improv because you're deciding upon so much in advance. And there is a whole school of thought that basically says, if you plan anything before you begin, it's not real improv. And I think you can, I mean, that can be debated all day long. I think there's a home for everything.
There's an entirely different school of improv where they believe, you know, improv is where you get a suggestion, you get 5 minutes to plan with your team, and then you go. So, I mean, there's all different kinds. But I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's like you should have absolute freedom, but I think there's room for everything.
Yeah, I do too. And it just so happens to work for me and Jake that if we give ourselves a little bit of a frame for what we're doing, then we tend to do better work. I mean,
I mean, I think we've talked about it on the show before that, I mean, you give a 3-year-old a blank canvas and you say, draw something, they're going to be like, But if you say, draw your favorite train, then they're going to give you something great.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of more interesting to see what they think about train than just what they feel like drawing.
But there's a quote, I think it might be John Stewart or something. Somebody said, like, creativity comes from your limitations, not just open-ended. You've got too many choices.
I do think that's an opinion, and I tend to agree with it because it works well for me. But I think that this year in teaching has shown me just how many different minds there are.
That's true.
And so there are some kids who are sort of like, stop giving me limitations.
Right.
Stop giving me framework. I know what I want to do.
Right.
Or better off, I mean, I love it when it's sort of like, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't want you to figure it out for me. But I'm the son of a cabinet maker, you know, a person who's worked on contract his whole life to make beautiful things within other people's imposed limitations. And I feel like I'm very much his son, you know? And so all of my work has been that way. All of my work since I started earning money for doing creative things or educational things has been responding to a set of limitations that somebody gives me and then seeing if I can get inspired by that. Even when I write songs, like I do better when I'm writing a genre thing, you know? So in some ways I wish I wasn't like that because I feel so much admiration for people who are pioneers of genre, for people who create new canvases, you know what I mean? Yeah. New frameworks.
Or teach themselves how to play so they're not locked into certain chord structures, things like that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So in so many ways I admire people like that, but I know myself fairly well. And I think that for me, pushing myself means allowing myself to remove some limitations once I'm comfortable with them. And so I can be uncomfortable again. So working with Jake gives me that because we don't hang out in the same spot for long. So,
One last question about Dream Sequence. Do you find that because the concept for the show is very different from any of the concepts that you guys have ever worked with before, I believe, mm-hmm. Do you find that the way you function as an actor on stage is different? Do you find that you work space work differently, or you interact differently because the concept, the reason you're there is such a different reason?
I think one of the things that is totally different about this show, the last one we did was a parent-teacher conference, so every scene was grounded in reality pretty firmly. The teachers or parents might have been absurd or silly in some way, but they were always real people, and we were always pretty clear about that they were people. And this one, because it's dreams, they can be a little more unusual. Like, I played a tornado in the show 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit more out there, but it still feels like an Interplanetary Appeal scene. It's mm-hmm. just a little more dream logic worked in there too,
but still logic. Still grounded.
For the most part.
If
we go without logic, that's when you stay awake at night. You're like, what the fuck was that? Because we had a conversation last week. You were like, now, when you took the penny from me after the porta potty had been tipped over, where did you envision the porta potty being? And I was like, well, it had been tipped on its side, clearly. And you're like, okay, I just was unclear on this.
But my favorite scene last week was a scene where, I think, again, we've talked about this before, this is one of the dangers of inviting the same people back, is that they're going to tell the same stories. But like, I won't tell the story, I'll just say the moral of it. But like, I like the idea that grounded doesn't mean, and there's quotes around grounded for the car listeners or the workout listeners or whatever. Grounded doesn't mean realistic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's not what that means. Grounded means that whatever weird shit happens, you feel some type of way about it.
Right.
Mm. You know, like, that's what that means to me. And so I like playing absurdity with emotional stakes. That's my favorite thing. Mm. Like, last week, my favorite scene was one where we were angels, and he was about to go down and
I was going to do my first guardian angel
bit. Well, it wasn't your first one. It was your first one since you'd been counseled on how to do it correctly. and so we hopped off a cloud with an umbrella over us to sort of, like, first of all, shield us from the rainstorm, but also allow us not to crash.
To soar down,
It was amazing. I loved doing that. I loved hopping down from the cloud with the umbrella. And those two angels had real stakes in what was going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's totally crazy and weird, but, like, also...
But it was important to them, so, like, then we cared.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely.
So, I lied. One more question. last question. Do you think that because you guys have been playing genre shows that you have invented for so long, like, this dream sequence show, it sounds like, especially from that talk right there, this lets you kind of do, like, controlled montage work for a brief period of your show, mm-hmm. that then gets to inform much more grounded, grounded in a different, much more realistic.
Yeah.
But it really lets you go to the, I mean, you can never have two angels with jumping off of a cloud with an umbrella in parent-teacher conference.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
we might have done it anyway.
The whole saxophone thing. Remember the Southern saxophone thing?
Oh, we did do a Sell Your Soul to the Devil thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I and fully believe in the devil. No, I'm just kidding.
But no, you are right.
You're right. Yeah. We get a little, it gets much more freewheeling.
Yeah. Freewheeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just totally free man. We just are free to do what we want.
I mean, just the idea that, you know, anything is possible.
Yeah. Which is also daunting to me in particular. I'm like, okay. But I'm getting better.
Where's that cabinet frame?
Yeah, exactly.
No,
yeah.
It's pretty fun though. I like that stuff. Like, the first show we did where I had to play the tornado, I was like, mm-hmm. yeah, you can just do whatever you want. It's a dream, right?
Yeah, but I think everybody would be like, if anybody had ever seen this before and they're like, which member of Interplanetary Appeal is more likely to play a tornado? Nobody's going to be like, James. So that's why you're more comfortable.
Yeah,
I'll get there.
You'll play a tornado who's at his house plotting out which is the most efficient way.
Exactly.
The high pressure and low pressure areas have combined here.
Yeah.
And now is the portion in our show where we throw the microphone over to Philip Simondette for a brand new segment that we call Philip's Corner.
How long is it going to be brand new for? Brand new every time.
Oh, sorry.
It's a secret.
So, that's the running gag.
I've never had anybody call you on that before because they've never been back.
That's why you never let them back. Although if they, never mind. Go ahead.
We plan on doing this show for so long that percentage-wise, it's still very new.
Did that years 1 through 5.
You know how this works. I'm going to stare you and ask you a bad question. Jay.
I'll be first this time. I've never been first.
Have you ever burned a candle all the way to the end?
What? I've been involved in the burning of a candle all the way down to the end. But I...
It was a game.
But it was an assist, because I don't... I think I've maybe lit like 4 or 5 candles in my whole life. Mm. And so all the other candles that I've been around have been lit by other people around me.
Me of a great song from Rent. I'd like to... No.
I'm just not much of a candle guy. Unlike T.I. in his featured rap rap part which Justin Timberlake song is it that T.I. is on?
I think it's What'd You Forget?
Got a light.
No, stop trying to do it.
Pretty sure it's Seasons of Love.
T.I. has this amazing line where he's like, they call me the candle guy. And I'm like, what? Why would they call you that? He's like trying to say that he's like romantic, and so he lights candles and stuff like that. And so he's like talking about setting up a romantic evening. So he's like, they call me the candle guy. And I'm like, T.I., you're such a good rapper. Why couldn't you come up with something better than candle guy?
Hey, that's T.I.
It's probably what they actually call
him. Oh my God, that's candle guy. What's his name again?
Have you heard that new sick verse on that song by the Candle Guy? You know,
T.I.
Timberlake featuring the Candle Guy.
Yeah, maybe it's not such a bad rhyme. He's just sort of like, hey, I didn't come up with it. I'm just saddled with the Candle Guy. That's what I'm called. But so I'm not a candle guy. So,
but have you witnessed a candle's end?
You mean like to the point where there's nothing left for it to burn? No, yeah. I've never seen that. Boy, that would be an exciting moment to be witness to. Never been there for that.
Great. Jake.
I want to say something about T.I. Or just because you brought in bad raps. Yesterday at school, we were playing with an iPad, playing with GarageBand, and you can do randomized beats. And like we got this hip-hop beat, and I was like, I'll rap for you kids. I know. Because they were driving me nuts. They were goading me on. I was like, fine, here's a rap. And it was just... It was so stupid.
What did you say?
It was mostly the rap from that Fruity Pebbles commercial.
What?
My name's Mr. Scott, and I'm here to say I teach 5th grade in a major way.
Oh, wow. So what we would expect that you would say.
Yeah. As a teacher, I'm totally the bomb. If you step to me, I'll call your mom.
That's better. Better second couplet.
But then, it was pretty stupid. But after I was done, and I was like, this is so dumb, some kids just went, whoa! I was like, really? No, guys, no. That was just done stupidly. We should all be embarrassed for having witnessed it. It was terrible.
I just lowered your ACT scores by 1 each.
Yeah. But a kid left the room singing that stupid song. Oh, I just heard him to himself, my name is Mr. Scott. And I was like, no, that's embarrassing.
Yo, I just heard a fat new flavor. It's Elk River. They haven't found rap yet. Right. They haven't made it all the way out there yet.
I think my teacher's T.I.
No, they call him the candle guy.
Jake, I just want to hear your top 3 potential rap names.
Oh, yeah, God.
This is good.
They're going to be really bad. They're going to be really
okay,
bad.
Okay, then I need 5 of them.
I'm trying to think of good. Probably Mr. Scott would be a good one, just as the teacher thing.
Sure. Definitely.
Just MC Reptile Enthusiast would be.
Yeah. Cold blooded.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's you good. Can be my hype man, James. Mm-hmm. what would be another good one? Dr. Bird.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Dr. Bird.
Ornithology raps.
I'm holding you to five now.
They're getting better and better.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Some worse. Rap names for me. See, I didn't even. I would just. This is the hardest Philip Corner question I've ever had. Usually something comes to mind. Oh, another rap name for me. There's just the candle guy, probably.
Might be taken.
Oh, shit, it is taken.
Jay Skittles.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. That's actually better than anything I would ever come
up with. Dr. Bird is top notch.
Yeah, Dr. Bird's good. Dr.
Bird is top notch. But I feel like Larry Bird would be like, oh, I go by that.
No, I like it because it kind of mixes together two older rap, right. Or two older basketball players.
Yeah, Dr. J.
And Larry Bird. Yeah. Did I give you four?
Yeah, that's four. Come on, man.
Dead air. Oh, rap name for me.
Why is this so hard for you?
Because I feel like a poser even doing it.
The poser.
The poser.
That'd be fine. Disappointed, Jake.
I'm so, no, see, I would.
That'd
yeah.
be a good one too.
I'm just glad we got yeah.
Disappointed, Jake.
Disappointed, Jake. I'm just glad we got Dr. Bird out of it.
Yeah,
Dr. Bird. Yeah, that'd be a good one. Yeah. Otherwise, no. Rapping teachers is like one of the things I hate the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, life. Look them up online. There's a bevy of them, a treasure trove of just of teachers who are like, I know how to reach my kids.
Yeah,
and they'll get their kids involved in videos, and it's so bad.
So bad. It's so. bad. And they're like my stupid Mr. Scott here to say rap, like that's about the level of rhyme.
Well, there are some people you can tell are frustrated rappers, like
Mr. Dewey is pretty.
I just get frustrated because to me I'm like, what do you think your kids are taking from this? They're not learning these raps, like whatever you think, they're not taking them home and learning these raps, because these are not like fifth grade kids, these are like high school kids. They're not doing that. They've got rappers they like already. Mm-hmm. They're not rocking their calculus teacher in their earbuds on the bus. That's not happening. So that's thing number one. And thing number two, why is the teacher in the limelight? Like, That should be a project that kids do.
A kid should write the rap.
Right. They're demonstrating what they know about a concept. Right. That's an assessment tool. It's not a teaching tool. Yeah. Anyway.
Mr. Dewey's rap is probably the best of the teacher rappers. Mr. Dewey's the best one.
Okay.
And he's still not, you're right. We wouldn't listen to that for pleasure. You just show it to your kids and be like, I've tried everything else. Maybe this.
Fantastic, you guys. Thank you so much. This has been Philip's Coroner.
Thank you, Philip.
Awesome. You guys ready to do some improv?
Yes. I hope it's better than my fucking rap.
Sorry.
Oh, Philip's Coroner stumped me.
Next at bat!
Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome to the Microsoft family somebody who I think you're all acquainted with his work. I don't think you know him in this capacity, though. So, ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, Dr. Bird.
Why, hello there. It's wonderful to be here today. I am honored to be the new head of creative at Microsoft.
Now, before anybody says anything about this, I know you're probably surprised by my naming an outsider to this position, but recently I've spent some time, as you know, my commute is long, I've spent some time listening to podcasts about rap music. And I was connected to Dr. Bird after I heard him on an episode of Microphone Check featuring Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
Oh, yes, I am an admirer of the rap arts. I hold a PhD in hip-hopology. I studied it with the best.
And that's your second career, isn't it, Dr. Bird?
It is.
After a long and storied career as...
an ornithologist.
Indeed.
It was apropos that my name was Bird. I studied birds. I saw a pileated woodpecker on the way here today.
Excuse me, Mr. Betters. This is ridiculous. First of all, that position was supposed to be mine.
Parker, I don't think I saw your name
on
it.
Who is this man?
This is Parker. This is Tom Parker. He's been with the company for a long time.
Tom Parker.
He was behind the Zune, so congratulations on that, Parker.
Yeah. At the time, it looked like it was going to be a world beater.
At the time, it looked like it was a doorstop.
Doorstop.
Anyway, Parker, what's your beef?
Well, I have several beefs here, not the least of which is that the job should have been mine, but I question this man's hip-hop integrity.
Is that so?
Oh, dear.
Okay, all right. So what I hear you saying is you're challenging Dr. Bird to a rap battle.
I challenge him to a rap knowledge battle.
Okay, well, that's less exciting, but we'll take it. All right, okay. So I have with me, as I always do, a set of trivia cards about rap music, and we'll see who knows what. All right, here we go. Let's start with you, Dr. Bird.
Certainly.
What song on LL Cool J's breakout album Radio inspired dozens of rappers to begin using a MIDI-generated bell sound effect as part of their percussion track?
Oh, we're starting with the easy ones, I see.
That's right.
Well, you all know LL Cool J probably from his wonderful situational comedy about where he lived in a house.
I wonder where he's going with this. Okay.
It was very good.
Yes.
He played a man named Marion who had been a football player. It's bringing back memories, isn't it?
Stop stalling, doctor.
Oh, the song's name is Mama Said You Have to Practice Piano.
I see you're just toying with me.
All right, well, let's see. Let's see. I will not disclose whether that's the right answer. All right, Parker,
Mama
here we
said,
go.
Mama said practice piano. I'm going to practice piano.
Oh, now Mama I remember said, it. That's the song piano. After all. I thought it was Rock the Bells, but that was the predecessor to Rock the Bells.
Mama said practice piano was the first appearance of those bells. Rock the Bells was after.
Oh, I feel like such a
you
fool.
Must not have listened to the unreleased B-side.
I guess I didn't.
Mama said practice piano. I will practice the piano.
You cannot front on that. All right, Parker.
Your question, Parker.
Yes. What is the name of the label that DJ Screw, Zero, and other members of the Texas rap Cognoscenti were a member of before DJ Screw's untimely death?
Still on the easy ones, I see.
Oh, Dr. Bird, you titillate me.
Like a titmouse, one of my favorite
I never
birds.
Claimed to know the hip-hop world.
Well, why wouldn't why you would think you that would be to key that? To the job? I don't understand why it is that you never, it never occurred to you that knowing everything about rap music is the most important facet in this job.
I just want one question for Dr. Bird.
Okay.
If you studied with Sharif Ali Muhammad.
All right.
Do you know who he is?
Of course. But I call him by his Muslim name.
Wait, Sharif Ali Muhammad is not his Muslim name?
No.
Oh, Dr. Bird, we're about to have the bomb dropped on us.
His Muslim name is Kent Tucker. I went bird watching with him. We saw a goose.
I just Googled it. He's right.
I had a feeling he was.
I turn in my resignation.
I'll accept it. Sir, your foie gras.
Oh, thank you.
I just wanted to let you know that there are some people who are outside of the restaurant who have been asked to be informed any time this inhumane dish is served.
Oh.
And so you may get a bit of trouble.
Stop, you monster! Oh. Stop!
Okay. You promised to wait outside the restaurant.
Stop! You can't hold me back!
You already
stop,
told
you monster! Okay, so you already told them.
They've been informed.
I saw it being prepared. I can tell when someone's going to eat something so monstrous. How dare you?
Listen, the deal was that you guys were allowed to harass people when they left the restaurant.
Yeah, I'm still trying to enjoy this delicious, indulgent food. Can I just...
I tore down the wall, so now he's technically outside.
Oh, this is terrible. You guys... Listen, this is terrible.
This is terrible. I'm glad we finally agree. It's terrible for you to eat this innocent animal.
Sir, can I ask, did you give your car to the valet parking
staff? Of course I did.
Oh, that was a... Okay, we don't have valet parking. Yeah, it's these guys.
We took your gas guzzler down. We had it made into scraps.
My Hummer?
We used your Hummer to make raised bed gardens.
Oh,
they'd make quick work. You have to hand it to their industrious. But dig in, sir. I hope you enjoy it.
Do you even know if that's duck or goose?
I don't have to know. I just put it in my body.
Wait, you don't know if that's duck or goose? Well, now I'm offended.
Okay,
you offended three people since you walked in this restaurant, sir.
Look, I'm just here to order food. I'm a lonely man with a busy schedule. I can't make it myself. I don't need to know how, okay? Just want to enjoy my indulgent dinner, please.
Did you hear that?
I did.
We all hate him, and he's lonely. Nobody would even miss him. You know what would be an ironic way for this to end?
Oh, by all of us throwing him a birthday party. That's not what you had in mind.
No.
Okay.
I haven't had a birthday in years. Just not enough. Well, I've had birthdays, just not parties.
I was thinking about shoving so much foie gras down him.
That he becomes a foie gras.
He becomes
himself.
A foie gras, yeah like death by... Yeah.
You can't do that. I'm not a duck or a goose.
But
well, you wouldn't know the difference if you were, so...
Oh, God. But I could go with a birthday party.
I mean, I'm always up for a birthday party. What do you say?
Yeah,
I guess as long as it's... gluten-free birthday cake.
What do you say? Birthday cake that's gluten-free?
Free or gluten? Do you want your own murder by foie?
Ed, it's up to you. We're going to give you a choice because birthday we are nothing cake. If we are not humanists.
We're going to do for you what you didn't do for that poor duck or goose.
Or the chef when you ignored the menu item.
Which, by the way, is pretty douchey.
Look, I knew what I was hungry for. Duck and or goose liver, okay? Just...
I can't imagine a world in which you're hungry without knowing whether you're hungry for duck or goose. I don't know. I'm trying to
Did you hear this, man? He almost said grouse. Like some kind of weird combination of duck and goose.
I thought maybe there's grouse option.
Are you Dr. Moreau or something?
Have you been conducting genetic experiments hoping that it would make it into the restaurant business so you could monetize?
Sir, you've
Are
just
you
shown your hand.
GMOs? Ugh.
So... You better take that birthday party quickly if you're going to take it at all.
Look, I don't know if it's still on the table,
maybe
Groose.
Maybe not.
Groose!
Look, I'm really into ornithology.
Okay.
I've been trying to create different species of birds that we can...
Wouldn't someone...
You got it in one. I gotta give it to you.
Ornithology know the difference between a duck and a goose?
I think he does. Don't you understand? He's trying to erase the difference, you stupid bastard.
It's experimental ornithology.
Oh, God.
I wish that I could claim the title Dr. Bird, but it's been taken.
Hey, baby, let's light a candle and get romantic.
Ooh, you know what I like. I like soft lighting that flickers.
Oh, I just lit a black cat firecracker. I hope that light is soft enough. Do you hear that Chuck Mangione music? I hope you like it.
I do. I like soft jazz. It's easy to listen to.
I know what you like, baby.
Oh.
I drove over to Wisconsin to get those firecrackers.
That's right. Those are not legal here. I like a man who lives dangerously.
That's why you're with me, baby. What do you say we light these candles all the way down until they're just a pool of wax?
And sweetheart, I just turned down the music. It was too loud. I couldn't work on my homework. I didn't know you had somebody over. I'm his sister. I'm Francine. What the? Have you got fireworks going in here?
Yeah, he's really good at setting the mood.
This is not... Oh, Jesus Christ. Listen, I'm just going to put this in my mouth and...
But,
Whoa, you
Thank
really...
God I had my cheeks fortified when I had my eyes done.
You really salted my game here, Francine.
Listen, I'm sorry you didn't tell me you had somebody over. I had to study for my life coaching final.
Well, I'm trying to have a romantic evening in candlelight.
It's working.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to salt your game or whatever. I'll leave you be. But can I just ask? You look a lot like. Is your sister Jane, who works down at a Cut for All Seasons?
Well, let's not talk about this.
No,
right
I mean
now.
In my salon. I swear, you look just like Jane, who cuts my hair.
My sister works there, Jane.
Oh my
yeah.
God, that's crazy! I love Jane. Yeah, I know who
small
he
world,
is.
Right? Let's get out of here, Francine. We're about to light off some more fireworks, if you know what
Wait,
I mean.
Wait, no, she...
Hey, Francine, where did you put the Fruity Pebbles?
Okay, who is that out there?
Francine, I'm just wondering where you put the Fruity Pebbles.
Give me a second, I'll deal with it. Excuse me, you're yelling into our domicile, and as far as you know, I am studying for a life coaching final.
Okay, I'm sorry, that's my brother. He's out in the mobile home that we share. Gerald, I finished the Fruity Pebbles.
You told me that if you were on a date, then I automatically get to date the sister.
I'm not in the market.
Okay, I didn't know that he had a sister. I just know that he's a smooth talker and a fast
This whole thing is ridiculous. Listen, first of all, did you finish the Fruity Pebbles without letting him know?
I did.
Okay,
do that.
Your sister is a piece of work. She's a piece of work. If I were you, I would put as much distance between you and her as possible. Secondly, I really wish that you would end this date. I don't think that she's up to our family standards. And thirdly, can we just...
I really like your way with words. You want to come on up here? And sit in my double wide.
Excuse me, I have a life coaching final I have to study for.
No,
Jesus
no Christ.
Hey, Gerald, she knows Jane.
Oh, really? She knows Jane?
They're from the salon that Jane works at.
Jane does my bangs.
What a small world.
I'd like to continue to get my freak on, please. Would you please leave us?
Where are you getting this accent from? You sound like a fancy weatherman.
I told him I love accents.
Is there a weatherman in there?
Hey, it's raining, weatherman, right? Come on.
I don't like it. It sounds creepy. I don't like that at all.
No, I'm...
You shouldn't have to cover up who you are to impress somebody who will use up the last of the Fruity Pebbles and not tell her brother.
You're really... All right.
That's better.
Come on, my gosh.
This
I was
your
just
voice?
Trying to
Be
do something.
Are,
I get this pretty girl
yourself.
Back to my house.
This is your voice?
This is my voice. I've been taking a little bit of vocal coaching to perfect that other thing so I can attract ladies. But it really hurts my vocal cords to continue that. I'm sorry. This is who I am.
That is not a smooth talker.
I'm not a smooth talker.
Listen, if you don't like my brother for who he is, then maybe you should make your way on back to your double wide, okay?
Hey, I just wanted to let you know I let myself in, but I just ran around the corner to the Tom Thumb. They have Fruity Pebbles. I brought
Can
a box
I just ask,
to you.
There's a beautiful beard.
Oh, thank
there's
you.
There's a lovely beard. I
sculpt.
Yeah, I can clearly tell. It's not like some people's beards. You see a lot of beards around nowadays.
Good.
They look like overgrown hedges.
No.
Jane Yours trims like it for him.
Oh, well, that makes sense. She's so good. She's got good hands.
And you know, all of the undershave?
Yeah.
I do it in the shower by feel.
Wow. Jane does it in the shower.
You?
For him.
Oh.
We all share this. She lives in the mobile home with us.
Oh,
it's a very tight quarter.
Jane's in there?
Enough
She's at work
jabba.
Right now.
Let's split open that Fruity Pebbles and share it four ways.
Yeah.
Is there some left? Did you leave
some? I just bought some at Tom Thumb.
Of course. Well, you know, why not make it a... You know, okay, I'd be willing to let bygones be bygones if we could just sit together...
And eat some Fruity Pebbles.
You know what? Let's light some candles.
I didn't get any milk.
That's 4:40. That's it. Oh my god. That went fast. Next up, bats.
And that's our show. Thank you to Interplanetary Appeal. Thank you to James Rohn and Jake Scott again.
Absolutely.
For joining us today.
And months ago.
6 months ago. And if you want to see more or learn more about what Interplanetary Appeal is up to, go check out their Facebook page. It's facebook.com/interplanetaryappeal.
They are undoubtedly thinking up some very highbrow new concept for a show.
Absolutely. Their stuff's very high concept, but they really work it out and make it interesting and accessible. It's a lot of fun to see what they do.
You can catch me and my house team from the Brave New Workshop, the Houlihans. We're actually over at Huge Theater for Huge Wednesdays in December and January. That's 31st and Lindale, Huge Theater. You can also catch me over at Comedy Sports, various nights over at the theater there on Lake and Hennepin.
And I'll probably be over at Huge at some point in the near future too. So eat that, audience.
As always, you can stay in touch with us, facebook.com/nextatbat, nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com, and find us at noisepicnic.com.
Yeah. And so thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for next week when we're going to have a brand new guest. Phil loves it when I do that one.
Love it.
Yeah. And until then, as always, praise Jai Bosch.